Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the place also known as Tochage in Ganyagaha and Munayang in Anishinaabemowin, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, March 17th, 2022. Happy St. Patrick's Day, happy Purim, and happy CKUT 2022 funding drive. On tonight's show, my guests, Jesse Stong of the Young Creators Unit at Playwrights Workshop Montreal on the Queer Reading Series.
If you're in 2022 and you haven't, like, become cool with queerness, it's like, it's not for you anymore. We have our, it's for us now, like, and so you're seeing a lot more stories that are more complex and characters like Black Casper and also the characters in the Johnny's piece too. Like, there's more complexity. They're allowed to be bad and queer. They're allowed to be complicated. You're allowed to be troubled, but not suicidal necessarily. You can just be a human being, right?
Francois Blouin reinvents Oedipus Rex with a little help from mime and clown.
Clown, for me, it's an art that is trying to be in between two worlds. The world of reality and the world of fiction. And Oedipus, in his own way, is blind when he's seeing with his own eyes. But when he stabbed his eyes and he became blind by himself, he started to see in a way.
And would you like to put on a show at The Fringe? Mainline Theatre's artistic producer Kenny Struli on the return of The Fringe Lottery.
But we're coming back with our festival this year. And the most exciting part is we're coming back with our lottery. And we haven't done the lottery in 2 years. So it is really something I'm looking forward to.
Today kicks off CKUT's 2022 funding drive. The station's goal is $35,000 to be raised over the next 10 days. And every show, including Upstage, has a funding goal. You can help us reach that goal. CKUT is a nonprofit campus community radio station. I fall under the community wing of that title. If you appreciate my coverage of theater in Montreal, please help out. Any amount helps. You can donate at ckut.ca/donate, call 514-907-9424, or you can mail them. Radio CKUT 3647 University, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. You can donate via check, debit, Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal. And for donors to Upstage, I've got a thank you present. My very first two donors will receive super passes to the 2022 Fringe Festival, and I'll have more treats to come, but you do have to open your wallet and help us reach our funding goal. CKUT, of course, also has thank you gifts. A donation of $30 will get you a CKUT zine and one entry into a fabulous draw. $60 will get you a t-shirt or a tote bag with one entry for that draw. And so on and so forth. Upstage is here because of CKUT Radio, and it's here for you. I have the space to cover every little detail of the Montreal theater community, the interviews and the developments and the news you won't necessarily get anywhere else. Conversations with creatives in Montreal, working in both English and French and other languages. Visit ckut.ca/donate to learn more. Now, on with our show. Jesse Stong is a dramaturge and writer, and he has overseen the development of countless plays by emerging writers through the Young Creators Unit. It's a program at Playwrights Workshop Montreal, and over the years, it has begun to showcase the words of emerging queer writers here in Montreal. The team is bringing back its queer reading series in person this weekend. Two plays by emerging writers will get staged readings at Centaur Theatre, and it's free. On Friday, there is Black Casper's No Justice, No Peace. King Rose, aka Black Casper, is a multidisciplinary hip-hop artist in Montreal. They debuted the Black Casper universe at the 2021 Fringe, a fictional superhero world with a vigilante at its core, who is, of course, skeptical about their role and the superhero ethos. Black Casper is also the founder of Transgenders, the world's first record label dedicated to trans musicians. And on Saturday evening, there is Ajani Poirier's Scorpio Moon, set in a crumbling warehouse one hot summer evening. Two estranged friends reunite, but Lily and Koa both have different wants and needs for their friendship. Ajani is studying playwriting at National Theatre School in Montreal, and her plays include Celebrity Dogs and Still Gay When I'm Not in Love. I spoke with Jesse Stong earlier this week about the evolution of queer theatre and what it's like to see new works take shape. Welcome back to Upstage, Jesse. Thanks so much for being here. You must be so thrilled to be back in person this weekend.
I know. I'm very excited. I'm getting my my sparkly jacket ready, my suede shoes shined. I'm ready to get in there, make up for lost time.
It's so funny, right? We haven't had to think too hard about appearances for the last 2 years because either things have not happened at all or we're online. But now that we're going back in the world and seeing people, hopefully for good this time, there's a little more thought that goes into it. Like, what am I going to wear? Am I going to cut my hair?
I know, I'm kind of nervous about it. I'm like, okay, I have to look good. People haven't seen me for 2 years, except on Zoom.
What kind of pants are you going to be wearing?
The pants I haven't figured out. Suit jacket and shoes I got. I know there'll probably be a touch of eyeliner since it's a queer festival. So the rest I'll figure out as I go.
Right. Well, let's get right back down to the brass tacks there. The Queer Reading Series, back for the first time in 2 years. You are the director of this event. It's going to be at the Centaur this weekend. It's a showcase. Tell me about the two individuals we're going to be meeting and their works that we'll be introduced to on the 18th and the 19th.
Yeah, so it's two nights at Centaur. It's stage readings of plays by former young creators at Playwrights Workshop Montreal. So they're both artists that are under 30. And they've both written a little queer piece. On the Friday, it's a play called No Justice, No Peace by Black Casper. And on Saturday, it's a play called Scorpio Moon by Ajani Poirier. I'm doing some direction for the Friday, and then Murdoch Schoen is doing direction for the Saturday.
Tell me about each of the plays. I'll mention that Black Casper, the spelling, in case you want to look this up, it's B-L-X-C-K and C-X-S-P-E-R. It's not pronounced anywhere different. It's Black Casper, the play that they're presenting.
Yeah, Black Casper is an amazing trans artist who's created this whole universe. You might have seen them around town. They are also a rapper, and they've been on some Billboard charts, and they've been really, their rap company Trans Trenders have been doing really well, or music company for trans artists. So they've created this piece. They've done iterations of it before at fringe festivals, but No Justice, No Peace is about a universe around this superhero called Black Casper, which is Black Casper's alter ego. And so there's a lot of stories and pieces involved in it. It's kind of multidisciplinary, but what you're going to see is sort of the origin story of Black Casper. It's one night Black Casper talking about being a superhero, but it's also diving into this idea of like, what is a superhero, and questioning superhero culture. So the reason it's called No Justice, No Peace is it relates a lot to the intersections of queerness and transness and Blackness, and how that relates to society and control. There's a lot of like echoes of police brutality and echoes of our connection to the justice system within it. And there's music. There's three raps performed within it. It's going to be pretty epic.
And so tell me a little bit about this superhero persona, because this has really piqued my interest.
Black Casper is a rebel character on the outside. I don't want to give too much away, but Black Casper is like the vigilante that doesn't want to be a vigilante, and the superhero that doesn't want to be super. And so they're sort of forced into a position where they have to fight for what's right, because the Institute of Superheroes are not protecting the marginalized communities that matter to Black Casper.
Okay, cool. Right. So stepping up, we think of Spider-Man with a lot of responsibility, comes with a lot of talent. Oh, I'm messing up the saying,
power,
Jesse.
With great power, great responsibility. Exactly.
Right. So kind of like this reluctance to step in, but obviously they're super, so they got to step up and do something. So that's Black Casper and No Justice, No Peace. And your other playwright, Ajani Poirier, if I'm not mistaken, also a performer as well as a writer over the years, and their piece is called Scorpio Moon.
Yeah, Johnny is a performer, playwright. They're actually in the playwrights workshop, in the playwrights program in National Theater School right now in their third year. And Scorpio Moon is a little more intimate, a little less superhero. It's a two-hander on a hot summer evening. Two estranged friends find themselves together in an abandoned warehouse. It's really about them discussing the complexities of blackness and queerness, art, love, and really the question of forgiveness after betrayal is like the thesis of the play. It's a unity play, so it all takes place in like one actual hour of time, which I love unity plays. They're like my favorite.
Why do you like them?
Well, it's an activity that they make you do in your first year at National Theater School where you have to write a two-hander unity play. And a lot of them actually go on to being like pretty popular productions because it sort of forces the playwright not to pull any tricks. It's like you can't leave the room. You're in that conversation. So often we do like an exit and an entrance and something surprising to like get us out of the scene or get us into a new scene. So I love the idea of just a grounded unity play where it's like, this is the real time and you have to like dish it all out in the moment, you know?
So that is a unity play. I've never known that before, but I guess with the constraints put on you, you really have to step up and finesse the writing and the development of the story. Because as you were saying, you can't just have a character exit and come back later, or there's not really any deus ex machina moment.
Exactly. And especially for emerging writers, like I work with a lot through the Young Creators Unit, artists under 30. It's like often they'll exit a scene too early, or they'll like add something because they're trying to like get away from getting deeper, you know? So it just forces you to really dig in and get to the bottom of what the character really wants and needs.
That is the voice of Jesse Stong. He knows plays and playwriting. He is the director of the Queer Reading Series presented by Playwrights Workshop Montreal and Centaur Theatre this weekend, and specifically within Playwrights, the Young Creators Unit, where he is the head of the unit. You just referenced working with young writers there. Can you tell me a little bit about Ajani and Black Casper and where their strength lies with their playwriting, why you're choosing to highlight their works for the Queer Reading Series this weekend?
That's a good question, yeah. Well, I think both the plays speak to intersectionality. It's not just about queerness, it's about race and it's about gender and it's about friendship. It's about a lot of societal structures. And I think that's where a lot of queer theater is necessarily moving. It needs to be about like the intersections of oppression. And so I think both of them have like a really firm understanding of that. What I love about Ajani is just at her emotional core, she's a very open person and very like, when you speak to her, she's kind of seems quieter or seems like a deep thinker, but she actually just pours it all out in her work. And I find that her pages, even when I first met her a few years ago when she was in the unit, it just pours out of her this emotion. It's like the moon in Scorpio Moon, you know, it's like she just is like this reflection of society, big, bright reflection. And I think that Black Casper is always has stood out to me as being one of the most interesting people I've ever met. The way that their brain works, like they've built this entire superhero world that just keeps cranking out. There's music videos and there's plays and there's a comic book and there's clothing line. Like they're just this artist who keeps pumping out work and is just a force to be reckoned with. So we're seeing an intimate moment within that huge storyline. But if you wanted, Black Casper could sit there and talk to you about the whole world of the play for hours, you know, just like this mega mind.
That is the voice of Jesse Stong of the Young Creators Unit within Playwrights Workshop Montreal. And they are putting on the Queer Reading Series this coming weekend, pardon me. I'm wondering, when, for you, because you've worked with so many writers who are developing and honing their skills, when someone enters the Young Creators Unit, what kind of progress do you expect to see on an individual basis over the course of, I guess, a typical program, which I'm not sure how many weeks or months that might take, let's say, for someone like Ajani and Black Casper who are coming through? Like, what development do you look for?
It's an 8-month program, 7 to 8 months. We meet weekly. We pick about 12 people every year. It's been 7 years now. We used to pick more. It used to be like 25. So there's been over 120 artists under 30 who have come through the program since I started it 7 years ago. The thing about the Young Creators Unit is it's a customizable program. So it's like some people just want to like learn how to write something, and some people have a play that they're ready to produce by the end of it. Everyone comes at it from a different level, which makes it a really interesting space for exchange. And what we give is professional development support, mentorship. We connect them to people from the community. We help them work on grant writing, understanding story, workshops from people, interesting directors and writers and dramaturgs. I work one-on-one with everybody to really push them to understand their story, dive into the play they're working on. And so the results are mixed, but I think the reason why we joined with Center and started the Queer Reading Series is that openness has created a space where we have a lot of really unique artists. And I think because of my own queerness, or I don't know, just the way theater is, we've attracted, I said this last time, I think you interviewed me 2 years ago, but we attract a lot of unicorns into the program, and there's just always there's a lot of queer stories. There's a lot of really amazing non-conforming stories, you know? And I think that serves to show the openness of the unit, that we don't expect anything really except try and see what your story, where your story takes you.
And I'm curious to know, and I do remember you bringing that up before, that yeah, you're kind of attracting a plethora of different kind of artists coming from, with just like very different ways of identifying and different ways of lenses with which they see the world. Is it harder to get your play published and produced if you are writing it from a queer perspective? Like, is that still a tough challenge for emerging writers?
Well, it's really great, actually. It's a good segue. At 2:30 on the Saturday, we're doing a queer leadership panel, which is going to be like a talk in the Centaur Lounge area, where we have some leaders coming together to talk about that exact question: is queer leadership in queer theater, queer arts, where are we now and where do we want to go? I would say that there's definitely been a surge of queerness in theater. I mean, queerness has always been there since the origin of theater. It's a pretty queer art form, but there's been a way more, you're not seeing as much like queer theaters doing, are the only places where queerness happens. It's definitely spread everywhere. I think that it's definitely less of like the suffering suicidal script and less of the queer exceptional, I'm going to change my whole school and save straight people storylines. You're seeing less of that in theater. And where people are looking now is like intersectional stories, stories that seem really authentic, stories you haven't heard before with a queer angle, you know? So I think it's hard as ever to get your work produced. That's just like art. But I think the same rules apply to queerness as non-queerness. As long as there's an angle, as long as there's a hook, as long as there's something we haven't seen before, it's very possible.
My mind kind of stuck on you saying we're seeing less of the kind of story where someone's like, I'm going to step up and save my school. Like this kind of makes me think of Black Casper creating a superhero universe, but more along the lines of someone, if you're going to write a play from a queer perspective, maybe there was this expectation that the main character, the periple, the plot was going to lead towards saving not just themselves, but the community. Am I accurate? Is that what I picked up there?
Yeah. Like, I mean, queer people do exceptional things and we rise above, you know, so there's lots of those stories still, but you see a lot of movies and a lot of the trope of like, oh, no one understands me. I'm going to do everything I can to be understood. I'm going to do everything I can to be helping. It's the queer eye for the straight guy kind of vibe, which is even that shows for queer people now, right? It's yeah. For us, by us now, but you see a lot of that, like, oh, and a lot of times it's not written by queer people necessarily, or the whole team isn't, where it's like this exceptional queer is going to teach this whole small town how to be open. Whereas now I think a lot more art is sort of like, if you're in 2022 and you haven't like become cool with queerness, it's like, it's not for you anymore. We have our, it's for us now. Like, and so you're seeing a lot more stories that are more complex and characters like Black Casper, and also the characters in the Johnny's piece too. Like there's more complexity. They're allowed to be bad and queer. They're allowed to be complicated. You're allowed to be troubled, but not suicidal necessarily. You can just be a human being, right?
Yeah, you can just sit with it and not want to save the school.
Yeah, like the movie Prom, I couldn't stand it. It's like, oh, one day everyone will understand and accept us. It's like, have your own prom. Forget this prom. Like, do your own thing.
So well put. So if you're listening right now and any of this is ringing true or has piqued your curiosity as it has mine, we will have the Queer Leadership in Theater panel. And when we say queer leadership in theater, like, what does that mean to you, Jesse? I just want to explore that.
Well, it's been funny. We've been planning. The panelists are Corey Hodgson, who runs the Rose Festival, which is a queer femme festival, and Greg MacArthur, who is a playwright, pretty popular Canadian playwright, mm-hmm. Professor Concordia, Gabe Maharjan, who's a younger artist, playwright. They were in the original queer reading series 2 years ago, and they work at Quebec Drama Federation, and Elisa Palmer, who's a director and runs the English section at National Theatre School. So all of us are coming together to really discuss that, and it's an interesting question. Like, some people are like, I don't even know if what I do is queer. I'm just doing my work now. It feels less like focused on queerness now. And other people are thinking, oh, by being queer myself, no matter what I do, isn't a queer leadership thing, you know? So for me, I think that queerness, like, I'm into puppets and I'm into clown and I'm into burlesque and drag, and I like the low and unexpected art. So I'm pretty like engaged in queer forms. I think queer leadership is like not being afraid to push boundaries, not being afraid to let your freak shine, doing unexpected things, shocking things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's not everyone's definition. It can also be very grounded and simple, and it can just be about, like what I was saying about queers just being human beings is an act of rebellion on its own, you know?
Jesse, it's been so great to hear about the work and that you're thrilled to be back in person, and that you're going to hopefully be pumping out more talented artists for years to come. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Jesse Stong, director of the Queer Reading Series, presented by Playwrights Workshop Montreal and Centaur Theatre. He is the director of their Young Creators Unit. There are 2 staged readings this weekend. Friday, March 18th, No Justice, No Peace by Black Casper. It's about a superhero who is reluctant to don the mantle. And Saturday, March 18th, Scorpio Moon by Ajani Poirier at the intersection of the Black identity, queerness, 2 friends meet in a warehouse that is falling apart on a hot summer's night. Both readings take place at 7 o'clock at night. On Saturday, there'll be a panel on queer leadership in theater. At 2:30, Jesse will lead a discussion between Gabe Maharjan, Corina Hodgson, Greg MacArthur, and Elisa Palmer. To reserve your ticket and learn more, visit playwrights.ca. The event is free. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. And just a reminder that our annual fundraiser launched today. It's called CKUT Till Infinity. I've got special gifts for listeners who donate to Upstage. You can stay tuned to find out more. Contribute to my coverage of Montreal's theater scene at ckut.ca/donate. Still to come on the show, would you like to put on a fringe show? The lottery is now open. And that means that, yes, there will be a full fringe this summer.
If it appears that COVID-19 symptoms like cough, fever, sore throat, and loss of taste and smell are beginning to present themselves, you can begin to self-isolate and take a rapid test at home. After getting your test results, you can learn more about proper self-isolation guidelines by visiting quebec.ca/self-isolating. This information is there to help protect you and everyone living under the same roof. All of us can make a difference, so let's keep making sure all of us are safe. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
If I say the words Oedipus Rex to you, what comes to mind? No doubt, the word tragedy. A child sent away from his family at a young age in order to prevent him from fulfilling a prophecy that he will kill his father. But he finds his way back to his home country and kills his dad anyway. And that's just the start of the story of this very complex tale that comes to us from the Greek writer Sophocles. François Blouin wanted to explore Oedipus Rex, or Oedipe Roi, through another light. François has worked in several different artistic mediums, from theater to virtual reality and video games to television and classic live traditions like clown and mime. So François is donning white face paint and searching for the comedic and serious sides of Sophocles' doomed Greek king in his new show. It's called En Attendant Oedipe. It's his first solo show, and one that he has also written and directed himself. It launches tonight at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine, but I got a chance yesterday to speak with François before his dress rehearsal. He joined me from the theater with a bushy, full white beard, and a playful button-up shirt emblazoned with flamingos. François said he felt like he had to bring some humor to the situation for such a heavy story. This is my interview with François Blouin. Bienvenue, François, to Upstage. Thank you so much for taking the time. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for receiving me on your show. I mean, it's really cool to talk about it like that, very freely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's nice to have someone ask you questions about something you've probably spent a lot of time working on, right? How long has this process been going on for?
Oh, that's a question for an hour as an answer. I mean, concretely, for 8 months, basically, in terms of schedule for the show, rehearsing, writing, doing a lot of improv, doing some mime, doing some tests, until today, I guess it's 8 months. I've been reading a lot about Oedipus for, 20 years, 25 years. I'm a big fan of psychoanalysis. I've been reading like a maniac, lots of Carl Jung, Freud reading, but lots of Winnicott, actually. I'm a big fan of the psyche and the idea of subconscious and mythology. So it was kind of an obvious subject to go and dive into Oedipus. So I started doing workshop about that 8 or 9 years ago. I did a short workshop because I was like obsessed with the idea of bringing a clown into the world of Sophocle, the author of Oedipus. So it was, for me, it was a very strong intuition. For me, a clown is a character that is living in between fiction and reality. He is a funambulist, a tight wire artist, trying to be sane and at the same time stay enough crazy to be alive.
Yeah. Being up on a high wire, you have to be sane to maintain your balance and to not fall. But at the same time, the person walking across a wire, looking all the way down and doesn't freak out, has to be a little crazy.
A little crazy. So for me, clowning is about that. I mean, I don't invent this. I mean, lots of clowns said that in the past for centuries, actually, because clowns are existing for a while. I've been existing for a while. So clown for me, it's an art that is trying to be in between two worlds, the world of reality and the world of fiction. And Oedipus, in his own way, is blind when he's seeing with his own eyes. But when he stabbed his eyes and he became blind by himself, he started to see in a way. So for me, he started to be wise. He started to see himself for who he is. And he accept that he was blind when he was a king. And now he's an homeless. He's on the street. He's alone. And now he see the truth about himself. So there's something for me, for any reason, in between Oedipus and a clown. I mean, a clown doesn't know what's happening. You know, a clown have a memory of 1 second and maybe less than that. But at the same time, a clown know everything.
Yeah.
You just always forget it. So so for me, there's a couple of connection with Oedipus. On top of that, I'm a big fan of Jean Cocteau.
The filmmaker?
The filmmaker who happened to wrote a piece, an adaptation about adaptation. Yeah, in English, we say adaptation. Huh? Adaptation, no, c'est une adaptation. Oh, no way. Between two words, not two words, but two worlds right now, English and French. So Cocteau in La Machine Infernale, it's the name of his adaptation of Oedipus, kind of mix the symbol a lot and bring some kind of a great finale at the end, which is more, it's not a joyful piece anyway, for sure. It's really a real tragedy. But there's some kind of, comment on dit, espoir.
There's hope.
Hope. Oh, yeah, that's the word in English I was searching for. There's some kind of a poetic hope in the ending of Cocteau. So I kind of drag that ending into my show in a way. Don't want to spoil anything, but anyway. So to answer your question, I've been working on that for a while.
That is the voice of François Blouin, who is the performer, the creator, the director of En Attendant Oedipe, or Waiting for Oedipus.
Yeah.
Can't Help But Wonder, is that a direct reference to Camus? Not Camus. Oh my goodness, Waiting for Godot, is that another literary reference?
Of course not.
Okay. No. You're smart. You were so deadpan right there, but then like the twinkle of a smile, why? And you can't, and you couldn't hold on to it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Why thinking of Beckett while waiting for Oedipus? I mean, there's no link.
Yes, do you think people take themselves pretty? I think we have a light way of looking at things, but like to reference Beckett and to reference Sophocles and all kinds of greats here in this work, but to do it with clown and mime, do you think there are people who would question that choice or be offended that you would bring those together, mix this all together?
Offended, I don't know. That would be interesting to hear. Surprised, maybe shocked. Okay. Yeah. Offended, maybe, or maybe they think that the mime is sacred and we should not mix Greek tragedy with mime. That will respect that. And I would love to discuss with them, actually. Clown, I'm sure they don't care. For the Greek specialists, the thing is that in past Greece, 2,500 years ago, when the people were going to see theater and drama in fresh air outside, there was always three tragedy at the same time. It was like a triptych, a trilogy. So three tragedy, and after that there was a satire, which is always kind of a comedy mocking in a way the tragedy. So it's already in the idea of Greek tragedy to bring some kind of a Dionysiac or Dionysus character making fun, laughing, but at the same time creating some kind of a contrast with the tragedy of life, because that's the point. I mean, there's nothing we cannot laugh about, almost. There's some subject that that's sacred that I think we should not laugh about, but there's a few very... So the life is tragic, of course, but at the same time, we cannot only say that. It's not true. It's not only tragic. It makes no sense. Otherwise, if we say that life is tragic, we start after a while to... You see, you're laughing. So we are in between the boat, I mean, and people who are laughing all the time are nuts, nuttier. Maybe they are nuttier than people who are tragic all the time. I guess in the end, I'm more tragic than a comic person. Profoundly, I think I guess the clown helped something about that. I don't know.
What drew you to clowning and mime work then?
I like the Russian tradition of clowning. There's a great, great, great tradition in the Russian history of clowning. Some of the best are from the Slavic
Slavic tradition.
Because they bring this tragedy, you know, the Russian clown is not funny that much, but he is kind of funny because he's so tragic that we relate to him, with him. Mime. For me, it's really, I work with Jean Asselin at l'Omnibus de Montréal. I did lots of workshop with a great bunch of mimes. We're having a blast. For me, mime is really the base of presence, of course, of movement, of immobility. For me, it's the basic tool or the basic vocabulary to do clown after, because it's not that I'm really doing mimes. Actually, I do some in the show, but they are not really traditional mime per se, but still I always use mime because mime is, I mean, the Decrou, Étienne Decrou mime, not the Marcel Marceau necessarily. I mean, it's really the Decrou, which is really like the alphabet of the body, how you move the only the head or the toe or whatever, the arm or... for me, those are the notes, and we're playing with that all the time. So it's, it's the base. Yeah.
That is the voice of François Blouin, who is the performer, the creator, the director of En Attendant Oedipe, which arrives at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine just this week. So tell me a little bit about how you're going to look on stage, because we were just talking about how you're taking a little bit from this tradition, moving away from that tradition. I understand there'll be white makeup, white face makeup.
Yeah, it's a little white face makeup, which bring me more to some kind of a specter, or some kind of a, not a ghost, but it bring my face more to a tragic mood, I guess. But at the same time, there's a little tweak in the makeup that give an open door for clowning. I keep my beard, of course. I don't shave it for tomorrow.
You're several inches into this beard too. I wouldn't want you to get rid of it for the stage, that's for sure.
It's funny you're asking about the costume, because it really evolved in the last days. But there's an old costume that finally I'm using, which is workers' clothes. Like really, like I went into a worker's shop and I wanted to have like pants and a shirt that were like resistant and sober and kind of dark blue. Because I thought that my first clown, and it still is, he's someone from not necessarily the street, but I mean, he's a worker, he's a common worker that is trying his best to make a living. So it's, and I like those clothes. There's something, first, they're very honest clothes, because you buy it once and you don't have to buy it twice. So, I mean, we're talking about honest fashion here, which is good. And I found Sarah Balleu, a stylist, give me a hand like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I was searching for shoes. And while I was waiting, we didn't find some at her place. And while I was waiting for a cab, for a taxi, because there was a snow tempest outside, and since now the taxi business is kind of falling apart in Montreal, because there's been decision in the economic about helping or not those workers, so there were no cab. So I was outside with the snow with my costume, and it was like, well, so that's okay, I mean, there's worse. So I went back to the work, to the shop, to see Sarah, and she says, oh, you're still here, you've been out for half an hour. So, well, yeah, there's no cab. So I start to yell about the government, and I start to yell about the economic. And then she said, oh, by the way, I found those shoes. I didn't saw it first, but what do you think? And those shoes became my clown shoes for the show. And it's funny, because if I had not been waiting for a cab, I guess I would have not seen those shoes for the show. And they're kind of really cool. I mean, now I know we are in the radio, so it's like the mime of video.
They're like leather, typical what you would might think of as dress shoes, but they're gray, and then the tips for your toes are black leather, which I think is a nod to the clown or mime kind of uniform, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it is also interesting just to know about how serendipitous this can be, right? Well, the final product that we get to see on stage didn't just appear. It can take a circuitous route, waiting outside for 30 minutes or going to the store at the right time and seeing something. And then it just kind of comes together in its own way.
Yeah, exactly.
So we started off the interview and you were telling me about how you're very interested in the subconscious. And that's what draws you to the story of Oedipus, him being able to see himself clearly once he couldn't see anymore. Have you learned anything new about the subconscious and that philosophy? I know that's a big question, but maybe you can just tell us whether you learned something or not, and what we can maybe, I guess, look forward to seeing this weekend.
But what one thing I can say is, while working a lot on the final structure of the show, which is still evolving a lot, and it will evolve until the dress rehearsal tonight, what I found about subconscious, it's really a physical thing. I thought lots of time about the subconscious. I was thinking about it. I was digging about it. I was doing therapy about it. But now coming close to the opening of the show, closer to the opening, I really feel something subconscious, but through my body. I cannot think about it. I'm stuck with that, and which is okay, but I need to face that. And it's a physical thing. That's what I would say. Yeah.
It's been such a pleasure getting to know you, and I really appreciate you letting us a little bit behind the scenes of your process, what's intentional and what is not intentional as well. Merci beaucoup.
Merci à toi, Sarah.
That was François Blouin, the creator, director, and performer of En Attendant le Dip. The show premieres tonight at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine and continues through the weekend and next week. For tickets and more information, you can visit lachapelle.org, call 514-834-7738, or email beatrice@lachapelle.org. I'm Sarah DeAy, and I'm your host. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Just a reminder that our annual fundraiser launched today, CKUT Till Infinity. The station's goal is to raise $35,000 over the next 10 days. Upstage itself has a fundraising goal, so you can help us achieve that goal by making a donation and saying that you want to contribute to Upstage. I've got special gifts for listeners who donate to Upstage, and you can stay tuned. Very shortly, I'll tell you just what I've got to give away. You can help contribute to my coverage of Montreal's theater scene. We've got interviews and developments that you won't find anywhere else about the shows happening on all scales, from community and student productions to the big shows. To donate and learn more, visit ckut.ca/donate.
La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine presents Beethoven Mystic and Les Salons Acoustiques, a program about music in all its diversity.
Paper Beat Scissors, Katie Moore, Brad Barr, Sarah Paget, Thana Iyer, Cedric Danlavoie, Plants and Animals, and now, Marie, Pierre, Arthur, and more.
Beginning March 23rd, the Warhol Dervish Quartet performs Beethoven Mystic, a series of concerts dedicated to five of Beethoven's last string quartets.
Following each concert, an artist from pop or contemporary music will join the quartet for a unique performance.
The fourth edition of Les Salons Acoustiques takes place March 25th, 26th, and 27th, an eclectic program providing a unique sensory exploration without microphones or speakers. A CKUT co-presentation with La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine in partnership with Culte Montréal.
Information and tickets on lachapelle.org.
Have you ever wanted to put on a show at the Saint-Ambroise Montreal Fringe Festival, or do you want to put on another show? The festival has just launched its lottery, the process by which random would-be theater makers get their foot in the coming edition of the festival. And speaking of, all signs point to a full-fledged Fringe this summer. I wanted to get the lowdown on the lottery this month, as well as details for the coming edition of the fest. I reached Kenny Struli yesterday. He is artistic producer at Mainline Theatre, the home of the Saint-Ambroise Theatre Festival, and also host of the virtual Fringe Happy Hour. You can stay tuned to find out how you can get a super pass to the festival. Here is my conversation with Kenny Struli. Welcome back, Kenny Struli, to Upstage. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So how does it feel that Fringe is going to be back this summer? Is this exciting? Is it nerve-wracking? Is it like, pinch me, I can't believe it's real?
I think, you know what, pinch me, I can't believe it's real. You know, we had an edition last year, which was smaller, and it was just with five venues, but we're coming back with our festival this year. And the most exciting part is we're coming back with our lottery, and we haven't done the lottery in 2 years. So it is really something I'm looking forward to. To me, that's sort of like the launch of the festival. I know the Fringe for All, our main event where all the artists get like 2 minutes to perform on stage, part of their number, is our official launch. But for me, like, the launch of the festival is the night where we draw which companies are coming in. And it is a different year for sure, because we're doing it in March and not in November like we usually do. But no, it's exciting, and I can't believe it's happening.
Now, is it happening in March this month instead of November? Is that just because things have still been so uncertain, like not being sure if the full festival would come back?
Yeah, you know, we really wanted to make sure that it was safe for our artists and our patrons and our volunteers and our staff. to be coming to the festival. So we want to just look at how the pandemic was continuing. And so we decided to really take our time and see what was best. And now that everything's starting to smooth a bit more, it feels like it's the right move. And we're excited to sort of get that all started back up.
Remind me why the lottery is the way you do things.
The lottery is the way we do things is because we're part of the Canadian Association of Fringe Festivals, and our festival has to be non-curated. So basically any artist from the theater, dance, music, or any surprises out there like puppet magic, they can totally sign up to our festival. And then if they're drawn, we give them a space. They get to do the show of their dreams in one of our spaces in the Montreal area. And then they keep all the profits from their box office. So it's really up to them to decide what they want to do. And so the lottery keeps it a fair game for everyone.
What happens if people don't get selected for the year that they're, you know, prepped to do a show? Like, do they, is there like a wild card thing, like an American Idol where somebody might be able to get in a little bit later on? Or do you just have people kind of say, I'm going to reapply next year?
Well, you know, on the evening of the lottery, we select a number of companies, but it doesn't mean that we won't continue taking more after that. That's just the minimum we can take until we start building the schedule. Once we've built the schedule, we start going, okay, we have more spots. And that's where we go to our waiting list. So everyone's name will be drawn on the evening of the lottery. And after our official spots are filled, we will then start the waiting list. Now, if you're late on the waiting list and you're like, I don't want to wait, we are about to launch our off programming. And basically with the off programming is that we allow you to bring your own venue. So if you want to do a site-specific show, or you know a theater that would love to be a part of the festival and your show works perfectly in there, you could sign up. There is more info coming about that soon. But yeah, those are the many ways you can still fringe. And another way to fringe is you can also volunteer during the festival. You get to see the arts and what's going on. But yeah.
And the fun thing about bringing your own venue is that you've ended up with some really eclectic locations over the years, right? I think about having seen shows perhaps like in a back room of a bar or a theater space that just wasn't signed up. What's the weirdest location you've been to for a bring your own venue show for the off programming?
So I'll answer your question with two of them. There's one that I've experienced and one I haven't experienced. So 2 years ago, we had a show in an apartment. And as soon as you arrived and the showtime was started, the show was started. You thought you had to go sit down somewhere, but you didn't actually get to go. Like, the show began right away. You were in their kitchen. You were following them around the apartment, and it was really cool. But a couple years ago, before my time working for the festival, apparently there was a show in a laundromat. And I think that's just cool. Like, it's just, it's sort of like, it's a not specific theater space. It was, the show was about laundromats and the relationships throughout laundromat and people. So it was quite cool to have it happen in a space like that. And I think that's what's cool about the Fringe, is that not only can you experience a new show, you can actually set it where you want it.
That is the voice of Kenny Struli, artistic producer at Mainline Theatre, the folks putting on the Fringe Festival. And we're talking about the lottery. It's on now. You can submit to have a spot in the Fringe Festival 2022. Now, are we calling this the 31st edition or the 30th and a half? Or is this the actual 30th edition? Because last year technically was like the 3-decade mark, right?
Well, it was actually supposed to be in 2020. And then mm-hmm. last year, we decided to sort of like push it. Our 30th anniversary was going to be then. But this is actually, we're calling it the 32nd edition of the festival. So we've kind of just skipped a year between you and I. This is our secret and the listeners. But so we're skipping a year so that we can still follow what's going on. Because we did have a festival in 2020 called This Is Not a Fringe. It was just more of a virtual version of our festival.
So this is the 32nd that's going to be happening this coming June. Oh, that's so exciting.
It really is. Exciting is the right word.
So at what point in the process, like obviously not by this point in a normal non-pandemic year, the lottery would have been done in November and people would have had the chance to work on their shows for several months. So how does that affect what kind of festival we're going to get this year? Like, do you think the shows will be like, I don't want to say the quality will be worse. I don't mean that, but like, do you think people have had things in mind over the last 2 years so they can hit the ground running? Or we see kind of maybe things that are not as elaborate, but they're thought out in different ways because the timeline is different?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question because last year we launched a smaller lottery in April. And we had artists who weren't sure if they were, once they were in, if they weren't going to continue with the festival just because they weren't sure they were going to do something. And from that, one of our artists made a show that made into the top 10 shows of 2021 in like the Montreal Gazette page. So, you know, like I really believe in the magic of Fringe, and whether someone's been working on a show for the last 2 years or is selected during this year's lottery and gets a spot and decides now I'm going to put on this show that's been in the back of my mind but never been written until this moment, I think we're in for a roller coaster of emotion. We're going to find some great shows, some hidden gems within the festival. And I think the level of experimenting in this year will be exciting to see.
And I think too, just the fact that obviously the pandemic is not done with us yet. I think there's still a lot of caution in general in society, but especially in the arts community, because that's how you put on shows, is you're cautious and careful. But the fact that people have had 2 years to kind of brainstorm and have ideas, people have written plays, people have tried different kinds of artistic practices, an actor taking up writing where they may not have gone to that before, you know, picking up an instrument, for example, I think that lends itself to creativity, right? As you were saying, that one show that ended up being at the top doesn't have a typical runway, right?
It doesn't have a typical runway. And, you know, what I find cool what you just said is that, yeah, people have been at home working on their art and sort of developing them themselves within the pandemic. And I'm curious to know, because there's always an unofficial theme for the Fringe Festival that just happens like randomly, just because that's what happens with what's going on in the world and people are doing those kind of shows. But I'm curious to know if we're going to have a COVID themed festival where people are going to all do their shows with sort of like my experience of COVID and stuff like that. That's not the official theme. We don't usually have an official theme, but we'll see what happens.
The other thing too is that we are in such a different place than we were in 2021 when vaccinations were just getting off the ground for the general population. So I think it was May when I got my first shot, I would say, and I'm in like the general pop. People, obviously, some people got it sooner. So like the barriers of rehearsing and meeting in person, like that's kind of changed. Like we're not as nervous about being in the same place as before. That is like for the majority. Obviously, there's still people who are going to be concerned for whatever reason that they might have in their own lives. But like, it's not going to be totally alien to have actors rehearsing in the same space. Like the 2 meter barrier isn't quite a thing. Masking is probably still a thing, but I just feel like it's going to be more casual behind the scenes leading up to prep. And that is just a different experience of doing things entirely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for us, we're going to continue to follow the CNESST guidelines and see what their recommendations or their rules are, because safety is really important. Even as, because I'll point out what you just said, is that like the pandemic is not over. And so for us, with that in mind, we're going to continue what we worked on in 2021, which is our radical hospitality. So when you arrive to the Fringe Festival as a patron or an artist, you'll be greeted by our team. You will feel safe the moment you arrive, and then you'll feel safe when you leave the theater as well. You know, like we want to give you the greatest experience you can with the Fringe. If this is your first time experiencing the Fringe, come on down, because I know it's going to be a very safe place and there's a lot of amazing shows that are going to be coming. And if you've already been to the Fringe, you're going to even enjoy it even more, being welcomed in such an awesome way.
Kenny, it's been so lovely to speak with you. We have so much to look forward to. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
The lottery closes officially March 25th at 6 p.m. And then the next day we have a live in-person event at Mainline where we're doing the lottery, but it's also going to be in a live stream on Facebook.
Fantastic. So anyone can join in. Thank you so much, Kenny. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
That was Kenny Strooley, artistic producer at Mainline Theatre, the home of the Saint-Amboise Montreal Fringe Festival. Visit their website to find out more about the lottery, to find out how to apply, montrealfringe.online.red61.ca. That's montrealfringe.online.red61.ca. online.red61.ca, and 61 are digits. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 25th, next week, and the draw will happen the following day. And by the way, the Strip Spelling Bee is back at Mainline Theater. It's Strip Poker meets Spelling Bee for 10 contestants who go toe-to-toe with really hard-to-spell words. It's tomorrow night, Friday, March the 18th, 9 o'clock. And if you're hearing all about The Fringe and you're excited to attend this summer, well, I've got tickets just for you. I've got two super passes to give away to the first two listeners to donate to Upstage through the CKUT funding drive. It launched just today. It continues for another 10 days. The theme this year is CKUT till infinity. The station's overall goal is $35,000. And every show, including Upstage, has its own funding goal. You can help me reach that by making a donation. CKUT is a nonprofit campus community radio station, and if you appreciate the coverage of the theater scene here in Montreal, you can help out. Any amount is very helpful. Donate at ckut.ca/donate, call 514-907-9424, or you can mail Radio CKUT 3647 University, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. They accept almost all the different kinds of payments, check, debit, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal. And for donors to Upstage, as I mentioned, the first two that will donate to the show, I've got two Fringe Super Passes. I'm also working to get more prizes to give away, theater tickets to things that are coming up soon. And CKUT also has thank you gifts. $30 will get you a CKUT zine in one entry for a fabulous draw. Double that, $60. It'll get you a t-shirt or a tote bag. Very covetable. There's a new one for every fundraiser. So this is really like, you have to get it now. You also get one entry for the draw there, and so on and so forth. Upstage is here because of CKUT, and it's here for you. I have the space here to cover every little detail of the Montreal community theater scene, or rather the Montreal theater community. And if you appreciate any of that, please do throw us some money because it's much needed. It is a nonprofit. Visit ckut.ca/donate. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Tonight you heard Jesse Stong of the Young Creators Unit at Playwrights Workshop Montreal. The queer reading series is this weekend at Centaur Theater, a reading Friday night and one Saturday with a panel on queer leadership in theater Saturday afternoon. François Blouin, he launches his new solo show on Attendant Oedipe tonight at La Chapelle. And also Kenny Struli of Mainline Theater, where they're gearing up to host The Fringe this summer. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and ckut.ca. Have fun. Stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters. We'll be right back.
COVID-19 vaccines have helped protect us. Over time, the antibodies created after vaccination have been found to decrease. While we still have good protection against severe illness, a booster dose produces more antibodies that can help to strengthen our immune response. A booster dose is the best way to help protect yourself against severe illness related to COVID-19. Learn more and book your booster dose at canada.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the Government of Canada.
Good evening and welcome to the March 17th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight's a special edition. It's the beginning of the CKUT funding drive. Once a year we come to you, our listeners, asking for your support. It's been two tough years, but CKUT has continued broadcasting, even under some difficult conditions. And this year we're asking for $35,000 of your support. $35,000, your hard-earned dollars. CKUT programming runs 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And CKUT, to keep that programming on the air, of course, have to pay for the transmitter, the repair and replace of our equipment. We have our studio rental. And we also have to embrace new and expensive technology to enhance the programming. It's all part of the reason we come to you once a year and asking for some of your hard-earned dollars. Remember, CKUT is independent, corporate-free. It